Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And we have Kevin Williamson of NationalReview.com with us today, taking the place of Jim Garrity, who will be back tomorrow. Kevin, it's always great to have you with us. And we actually do have some good news for the good martini today. Jim and I have almost had to manufacture it a couple of these days because the good news just seems so incredibly scarce. But in connection with the anniversary, the gloomy anniversary, that is, of the passage of the president's health care plan last year, today is the anniversary of him actually signing it into law. But in the past couple of days, we've actually heard from a CEO we wouldn't think normally would be on the side of those opposing the president's health care plan, Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz. Starbucks, not exactly a bastion of conservatism, but he's basically decided that the costs are just too high for his company to really embrace the new health care plan, basically seeing that the health insurance tab is going to cost more than it cost him to buy the coffee. So he's basically joining those who think this is not necessarily going to be good for his company in the long term. And to have a big-time lefty like Starbucks turning on you can't be good for president, but it is good for conservatives.
Yeah, this is particularly significant, I think, because Starbucks was, of course, famous for being a leader in getting pretty cheap health care to its hourly employees. You know, when Starbucks was first really going through its big growth phase, practically all of their full-time employees were given some sort of access to a company-run health care plan. So it's not like we're talking about, you know, Walmart or something like that, which is not a company typically associated with having particularly generous benefits. But Starbucks always has been that way. And, you know, when you think about it, one of the guys who first came out against this was John Mackey, who's the CEO of Whole Foods. And another company, which a lot like Starbucks, has gone really out of its way to overcompensate in some ways its employees, and certainly to give them access to better benefits than you would expect normally in a grocery store type job. So yeah, when you've lost those guys, there's something wrong.
Absolutely right. And just to clarify, because, you know, you have some who don't think that the health care plan went far enough because there wasn't a public option and so forth. Here's basically the crux of it, according to Howard Schultz of Starbucks. I think as the bill is currently written, and if it was going to land in 2014 under the current guidelines, the pressure on small businesses because of the mandate is too great. So he's going after one of the key criticisms that many conservatives have. And you're seeing a lot of companies basically say now that they've got to keep their payrolls under 50 employees because they don't want to have to qualify for these government mandates and these government impositions that are really going to hurt their bottom line. And obviously that's not going to be good for job creation if employers are intentionally keeping their payrolls down so they don't have to comply with all this stupid bureaucracy.
No, you know, particularly smaller businesses, they need a great deal of flexibility. I mean, they want to compensate their people as well as they can because they want to attract the best people if they can. But there are, you know, times and situations in which they can do that, and there are times and situations in which they can't. And one of the bad things about these sorts of regulations is that, you know, a little startup business that's in its first 5 years operates in a very different financial universe than, you know, a company of the same size that's been around for 20 or 30 years, has an established cash flow and customer base and all that. And I think that's the real cost that never gets calculated into this isn't so much what it does to existing businesses, but how much harder it makes it to start a new one. And almost all of our job growth tends to come from smaller startup businesses. That's where, you know, that's where the real growth in employment comes, and that's where new and better jobs come from. And this, you know, this smothers that, which is terrible.
Absolutely right. Well, we had to pass it to find out what's in it. Now that we know what's in it, we definitely need to repeal it, and we'll see if any progress can be made along those lines. Certainly not legislatively, but the courts might have a say on that.
Pass it to find out what's in it and repeal it before we find out anything else.
Exactly. We know enough to know that it's no good. On to the bad martini now, and regular listeners will know this one has been sponsored for a while now by the Middle East, and we spent some time there over the next couple minutes as well, as this vast coalition seems to be a little bit waffly. Big surprise there, given some of the folks involved here. But, you know, you had the French leading this charge to have a no-fly zone in Libya. They had a few sorties in the early stages here and haven't done much since. The British are part of this. Neither of them wants to take the lead. NATO didn't want to take the lead since the U.S. is so convinced that we're going to be handing this thing off in a number of days. The Arab states that were pushing the no-fly zone are backing away. Now it looks like NATO might take it on for a little while. The president's apparently been on the phone and talking to people. And, of course, he's he's rolling up his sleeves on this one, Kevin, because he's not going to the Mayan ruins today, so he's clearly on top of all this. But it looks like this vast organized coalition is anything but, as at the very same time we find out that despite all these cruise missiles, Gaddafi is still putting the hurt on the rebels.
Yeah, well, the good thing about France is you can count on them to dispatch their entire navy to the conflict. Unfortunately, their entire navy has one aircraft carrier, so that's not exactly an overwhelming force, of course, which is one more than the Brits have now. Yeah, started off us saying, well, hey, at least the Arab League is on our side. And that lasted about 3 minutes, I think, before they changed their mind about that, 3.5. Like there was a foot race between the Arab League and the Russians to see who could stab us in the back first. I think the Arab League beat us to it, or beat them to it, rather, just by a little bit. The thing about that sort of thing is whether you call it a multinational operation, whether you call it NATO, whether you call it a coalition, it's us. It's always us, because we're the only ones that have the resources to do this sort of thing. We are, the only real military left in the world that is inclined to do anything outside of its country's own narrow immediate self-interests. When bad things happen in the world, no one says, oh, my God, let's call the Finnish, or, oh, my God, let's call Albania. They say, let's get the Americans here to sort things out. I think this intervention into Libya is a bad idea for lots of reasons. One, specifically because I don't see any American interests on the line. And that's the thing about Obama's base that always drives me crazy. It's okay to do whatever with our military, with or without congressional approval, whatever it costs, however many people get killed, just so long as there are no legitimate U.S. interests at stake. as long as we're not acting in our national interest, they're totally happy. But if we're out there doing something in which we actually do have some material interest, well, then, it's a war crime. So this whole thing is a mess. It's costing, $4 million an hour or something like that. There's a lot of stuff I'd rather spend that $4 million an hour on than knocking off Muammar Gaddafi, who, is a bad guy, and I'm all for knocking him off personally. But, we should have done that back in 1985. We've had a long time to get used to the idea that Gaddafi's going to be around. And as someone said, he's kind of like Castro. He's dead. He just doesn't know it yet. We're just waiting for him to lay down. Lie down. Pardon me. Pardon me, Mr. Buckley, for that misusage. I know you're listening. And, I just don't get it. I don't know what we think we're doing there, why we think we're doing it, or who we think we're doing it with. And the least of our concerns is whether we officially fly the NATO flag over it or not.
Yeah, good point. And just to get back to your point about the race to abandon the mission, it was just unbelievable that the Arab League was all for the no-fly zone and then aghast at the fact that things would actually have to be fired in order to establish the no-fly zone. And that was the excuse that they used to bail when clearly they obviously didn't have any sort of stomach to actually be part of any ongoing mission.
Yeah, what in hell did they think we were going to do? That we were just going to leave all of his anti-aircraft stuff there and just sort of dodge it? This is crazy. And particularly, Gaddafi, a lot like Saddam Hussein, a lot like his other colleagues in the Middle East, puts a lot of his stuff around population centers. We were knocking out stuff in and around Tripoli, where people live. And that's an inevitability of doing a campaign like this against an enemy like that.
Yeah, absolutely right.
He'll have his guns in hospitals before the thing's over.
Yeah, he's made it pretty clear that he's not going to be taken alive here, and that means he's going to do absolutely anything and sacrifice whoever needs to be sacrificed in order to cling to power. On to the third and crazy martini now. We've had a few dandies over the last few days, and this one is right up there with it. Apparently, Tuesday was World Water Day, Kevin. I don't know how you celebrated that. I celebrated by drinking as much water as I normally do, I guess. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, though, says he would not be surprised if there had once been life on Mars, and that the reason it no longer exists is because capitalism and imperialism had put an end to it. Here's his quote. I would not be surprised if a civilization had flourished on Mars and capitalism arrived, imperialism arrived, and finished off the planet. I hope his tongue was firmly in cheek, but he's crazy enough to actually believe such a thing and voice that type of propaganda. But that's impressive. You got to be pretty crazy to come up with something like that.
I tell you what, Hugo Chavez is a gold mine for me. I've just written this book about socialism, Politically Incorrect Guide to Socialism, go buy it. And I've got a whole Chavez chapter on his nuttiness and craziness. And I don't know whether he believes this sort of stuff or not, but he is the greatest comedian on the world stage, I have to tell you. He is a strange cat. But if you want to see a part of the world that actually looks like Mars on this planet, visit some of the old Soviet bloc. Visit some places that actually have had real socialism and real communism. And you will see something very close to a Martian or even lunar landscape in some of those places, because they've been poisoned and destroyed and mishandled in every way possible. But yeah, he's a real character. If he weren't, you know, torturing and killing people, he'd be an amusing sideshow.
Yeah, absolutely right. And Venezuela, if you like the outline that Kevin just gave of the old Soviet bloc, just wait, you're next. So
Check out the RLC, guys, if you want to see what the environment of socialism really looks like. Go check that out.
Incredible. Kevin, thanks so much for pinch hitting for Jim today. We'll talk to you later.
My pleasure.
Kevin Williamson of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join Jim and I on Thursday for the next Three Martini Lunch.